Season 9, Episode 7, Trading Up, Work in the Sex Trade. And a warning, this episode refers to adult entertainment work domains. We advise a listener discretion. Alan explores workplace claims involving an adult entertainment specialist, debating work arrangements and business entitlements. Work is work, and the sex trade represents a legitimate industry and workplace with regular entitlements. Sarah commends Alan. I'm so glad you thought to discuss successes, as she reflects on studying success and the value of simplicity. For more on the sex trade, listen to Season 2, Episode 6, Mi Casa es Su Casa. For more on high reliability organizations, listen to Season 5, Episode 14, You Are My HRO. For more on human factors, safety events and multiple fatalities at the theme park, Dreamworld Gold Coast, listen to Season 3, Episode 6, Cha-Cha-Cha, Thrill Rides. We cover it all on Why Work.
Bring it on, the kaleidoscope.
Hello, and welcome to the Why Work podcast, a series of playful legal dissections on the most curious and alarming events in the world of work. The podcasters Alan Girl, Trage Svetkovsky, and Sarah Pazell debate how to craft a better experience of work. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. And remember, none of the things we talk about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work.
Okay, we're recording.
Trage, in earlier episodes, we talked about a number of court cases where they'd either been sex workers or strippers, adult entertainment, where the business had tried to set itself up as a principal contractor relationship, but the courts found that it was really an employment relationship, and a lot of things flowed out of that, like all the rights that the workers had and what they were entitled to. Now, it's almost as though a business in Brisbane listened to those episodes and they've now set themselves up correctly.
Really?
So okay. We had a case that went through the courts just recently. It was in April of this year.
Okay.
It's a Brisbane-based case. So there's an establishment in the valley, which is part of Brisbane, and they called themselves K Club, so that's the letter K and then club spelt with a K. I'm sure there's some symbolic reason for that. I don't know what it is. That was the business name of a company which operated as 239 Brunswick Proprietary Limited. Now, there was a Sarah Murray, who was a stripper at that K Club, and she operated under a pseudonym, so she would have had a professional name. Now, they entered into a contract.
Okay, so stripper at a strip club.
Yep.
They have a contractual working
relationship.
Engagement, yes. Relationship.
Yes.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
Now, the nature of the relationship was that the club, if I just call it the club gave no money at all to Sarah, the stripper.
Why is her name Sarah?
I just realized.
Really?
That, yeah.
Sorry. Okay. All right.
Okay. So the stripper.
Sarah Bear.
So hopefully it's not offensive for me to call her the stripper, but the
well, that was her job role, right? Okay.
Yeah, but maybe
the
adult
baker,
entertainment is
adult entertainment specialist. Yeah.
So the
technician
club didn't give any money at all to her. In fact, she had to pay money to the club.
So she's rent, like a hairdresser, rent space.
It's kind of like renting. So she, depending upon the time of the day that she would turn up, she might have to pay an entrance fee, and the entrance fee varied depending upon the time you showed up. So the club had adjusted the entrance fee to encourage the strippers to appear at certain times.
Okay.
And she would... She paid to, there were two rooms. There, what did they call them? One was a VIP room and one was a lap dance room. To use those rooms, she paid a fee.
Hmm.
She was expected to dance on the stage, and there was no exchange of money in relation to dancing on the stage. Now, the benefit for her was that she could do whatever she wanted. So long as she didn't break the law, she could do whatever dance she wanted on the stage. She could wear whatever clothes or no clothes she wanted on the stage, have whatever accoutrements she wanted on the stage. She could charge whatever she wanted for a lap dance or other entertainment. None of it was, she wasn't a prostitute, she was a stripper. And if she got any tips, they were entirely hers. So she the money that she was given by clients, she got to keep. That was all her money. But she had to pay some money to the club. Now, interestingly, this was a bit surprising to me. If she didn't get enough dancers for the night, there was the potential that she could lose money out of the night, which I thought, well, gee, she can't be making a lot of money. If, the entrance fees were like $35. So, you know, what, they weren't charging her huge amounts of money. Now, I think so, what the club got out of it was when people turned up to watch the show, they would pay a fee to come in.
And more booze would sell? Oh, yes. So they get savings. Yeah. So gyms, for example, often contract personal training similarly. So the personal trainers pay rent at the gym, but they're bringing more people who have friends who might bring other people, et cetera, et cetera. Right? So it's another stream, income stream, and for some people it would be a loss leader, which I think you're saying is low rent, but it's bringing patrons and hopefully booze sells and everything else.
And so the court looked at it. So this was the Fair Work Commission. So I should say the commission looked at it. It was Deputy President Roberts who decided the matter, looked at all the indicia of employment. So there was no salary, there was no money at all paid by the club.
Okay.
The in terms of requirements imposed upon them, they were very few, really the essential requirements. So they had to make sure that they didn't breach the various laws that applied to the club. So they had to make sure the show didn't breach those laws.
So we're before the Fair Work Commission. So a complaint's been lodged about...
She lodged a complaint. She said she was dismissed.
Okay.
And they said, no, you can't have been dismissed because you're a contractor.
Totally get it.
So the commission doesn't have jurisdiction to hear it if she's a contractor.
Yep. Otherwise it's...
And they also said, in terms of tools of trade, she didn't wear a uniform that was supplied by the club. She could wear whatever she wanted.
All the High Court tests about name badge, uniform, car. There's a whole list of indicia.
If she used anything in the show, so if there were any items she took to work that you might compare with tools of trade.
Feather dress.
Feather boa.
Right, feather boa. Accessories.
Whatever it was.
Laundry.
whatever her show was.
A whip. I'm getting there.
Let our listeners' imagination run wild.
Well, I'm thinking Magic Mike right now.
I don't know what that is. Don't want to know what that
it's
is.
It's a movie about a male stripper. He's got Magic Mike Part 1, Magic Mike Number 2, right? Okay.
Okay.
And in terms of...
Okay.
There were no... in terms of rules that she had to comply with, they were very limited.
So footloose and fancy free.
So she did her own choreography.
Choreography. Yes.
It was her show.
She designed it.
Yep.
Her music, etc.
So
that to me sounds really interesting.
She's renting venue space.
Yeah, that to me sounds a lot like an independent contractor, arm's length.
Well, that's the conclusion the commission came to. Now, there is a bit of a twist in this one, in that for some reason, Ms. Murray didn't show up to the hearing.
Right.
So they went to great lengths to make sure that she had the opportunity to show up, or at least to put in a written submission.
Yes.
She didn't do that for whatever reason.
Or remote video call if something was constraining her or something, right?
So the evidence was purely based upon what the club had said.
Sure.
But the club's evidence, you can read the case, and the club's evidence is pretty much straight down the line. You know, they haven't... It's not florid, it's just matter of fact. These are the facts. So, there you are. The only reason I thought it was interesting was because we've looked at so many cases where the business has got it wrong, but this is a case where the business has got it right.
But what's more important, though, for me, is that irrespective of the facts and the circumstances, irrespective of who that person was and what they do, they are working and they are before the Fair Work Commission, and there is a judge or a commissioner, and I see that as the rule of law in action. So whether it's a complex corporate HR dismissal or whether it's somebody who feels that they're owed some compensation, that they were gainfully employed, but their work was night work or day work or salacious work or sordid work, the fact was this person, ironically she wasn't there, but technically had her day in court.
Well, she'd initiated the process.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's a beautiful thing because it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter, you know, what the facts and circumstances are. If you want your day in court, so if you want some, with law and justice in the courtroom, that's where they mix. And that person got heard. And to the point where, you know, they'd allowed opportunity to make submissions. And I think that's really important.
I think what...
It's fair.
This is me speculating, but I suspect what happened was this business has sat down and said, well, look, the commission's not going to favour us, so we really need to make sure that there's no doubt that this is a principal contractor-contractor relationship.
Yeah.
And then they've thought about what are the indicia, and then they've thought about how can we make this work, and they've set it up to make it work.
So you reckon that they've done a fair bit of work to make sure... They've done their homework, they've had to.
I think so.
They've treated it seriously.
I think they listened to our earlier episodes, and they've...
Yeah,
Alan, I love that you're bringing a case to study success. So I have often talked about in Good Work Design that you can reap rewards from studying success. So even in my earliest career influences, I sat on community councils where we simply traveled around. I mentioned this in San Luis Obispo to look at businesses that were successful and innovative, so we could learn and cross-pollinate some of these ideas. I do this all the time. When you look at resilience engineering, it's about, well, study success also, so you know how to benchmark this, because so important. Like, a lot of the safety hats, conventionally, even when they're really looking at critical instances and high-risk organizations, they look at the high reliability, HROs, right? A high reliability organization. We have mentioned this briefly, and I had a little concern about it. So I'll give you the HRO principles and go back to what you've done, Alan, which is great. The HRO, high reliability organization, talks about a preoccupation with failure. So you're always learning from bad stuff. And Trace, you know a lot about failures, right? State prosecutor. Sure. Yes, you need to know what's foreseeable, but I want to know what's possible and creative. So so I say add to that and study success, but there's nothing in this for a reliability organization to just study success and borrow this from other organizations to see what they've done well.
It would be lovely to hear from the owners of K Club and know whether they did additional things. So, for example... did they make sure that the performers had their own insurance so that if they had an injury they would be protected? Did they have safety procedures? Did they have something to manage aggression and the psychological health?
Yep. And who taught them this? Where'd they get this from? Was it from a breach somewhere and they had to improve? Or did they always have this preoccupation with doing things
or
well?
Or did they plan for success?
Did they plan?
And that's why they are successful.
Right?
Yeah, because that's right. And when you look at the adversarial process, sure, there's been a failure, but the other side has had success. So you could learn from, and this is a good case, particularly when defence wins.
I think anyone in the entertainment industry, it doesn't matter what the nature of the entertainment is.
No.
in the entertainment industry, you tend to be bringing in contractors to do a one-off job, or it might be a repeated show, but it's not like a full-time employee.
And things get lax. Like, we've talked about movie sets, you know, we've talked about recreation, we've talked about volcanoes, we've talked about amusement parks. Things get lax because it's all for the fun, for the entertainment, the spirit of the show, as opposed to, hang on, this is a routine workplace for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's the the moment, that recreational space, that's where things get. And I guess... You always go back to, you know, the 1,000 paragraphs of spectacular failure that was exhibited in the Ardent Leisure, the Dreamworld case.
The Art of Leisure, Ardent Leisure, right.
You could still read that, and I'm rereading it for that paper, for the rewrite, and just there is so much depth to the failure. It is truly mind-boggling how the largest theme park in the world was just so disconnected, so leadership with what was happening on the ground,
to work design, to all the cognitive distractions that the operator had with very little training, and how critical those operations were.
Indeed, and the coroner made which I hadn't really picked up on before because I've read it a couple of times, it was almost immaterial. That fateful day, it was a question of like the whole accident waiting to happen. So,
but say, remind everyone what it is, because we're talking about it as all of our listeners are in the know.
So, what is it? In late 2016, four patrons, the family members, which I guess makes it even more aggravating, I suppose, four patrons visited Dreamworld, which still is, I believe, Australia's largest adventure theme park, and there was a ride, the Rapid River Thunder ride, and
Thunder River Rapids ride.
That's it.
Yep.
Yeah. And on that fateful day, it failed, and four people died in the most horrific way.
Now, Ardent Leisure has since changed the name since this. It's now Coast Entertainment Holdings. Yep.
Oh, yeah, but companies, corporates always go through mergers and structures. But just reading, and so there was the many things. I hadn't read it for a while, but I always send it as a link for the students to read, but I don't expect them to read it all. It's like 200-plus pages. But I said break it down into chunks. And so in recent days, I've gone back to it, and the coroner said, you know what, yes, it happened on this day, but given the gravity and the spectacular shortcomings, the duty holder, the day doesn't matter. This thing was going to happen.
Yeah. And the design of work for ride operators were, in this case, was that a young or a junior operator was in a position that was, you know, quite safety critical, as you will.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of, you know, levers to pull and buttons to push and things to attend to while you've got children walking by, patrons, you name it, the ride to look for quality control, and not a lot of training and very little time for hazard response, an adequate hazard response that you would need to practice habitually to get it right, you know. Lots of short burst frequent training as opposed to annual refresher where you're doing 26 things and making decisions that were so compressed. They had a very detailed cognitive human factors researcher at UQ, University of Queensland, do the analysis on this.
One of the things that
it's crazy
is I find particularly interesting in that case is the worker who had all this pressure on her, she'd never pressed the emergency stop button. And I would encourage all businesses to get all their employees, just as an exercise, to press the emergency stop button to know that the place is not going to break, it's not going to fall apart, and it's easy to do. And it also fixes in your mind where the button is. If you pressed it once, then you're going to know where it is.
So intentional design, intentional leadership kind of aspect that you're talking about.
Yes, the latter. It's the intentional leadership, because there's so many permutations to this case, to the tragedy. But I reflected on it last night thinking the actual date, the date that it occurred, was completely unremarkable. So essentially what the takeaway was, that leadership disconnect was so evident that it was going to happen. So it could have happened the week before, the week after. So it would be like knowing that there is a field of abandoned mine shafts and you're going to let the kids go and play in there. That was the takeaway. And I thought, that's mind-boggling. So this case needs to be revisited, not so necessarily from what both of you have said about the, you know, about the buttons and about, you know, effective training, but... Oh, I think we've got a visitor.
Is there a bird in here?
I think we've got a bird in here. Hey. Let's stop for a tick. I think we've got a bird. Can we hear that?
There's a bird.
Oh, no, we're going to have to call somebody.
Aww.
Hang on, we'll pause it.
Would you like Trage, Sarah and Alan live at your next industry event? Why Work delivers hard-hitting insights with a side of fun. Why Work workshops, serious fun designed to tackle serious problems. We break down complex case law through real-world storytelling, allowing participants to reflect on the legal and human implications to their business. Perfect for those wanting to future-proof their organisation. Interested in a workshop? Contact hello@whywork.com.au or visit our website.
Bring it on, the kaleidoscope.
We hope you enjoyed that episode of Why Work. You've been listening to Trage, Sarah and Alan. And if you'd like to know more about some of the things we've talked about today, please subscribe and we'd be more than happy to provide you with information, names of cases and other things that may interest you. Please be aware that none of the matters we've talked about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work. See you next time.